Hello, everybody, and welcome to another episode of UFOs and the Paranormal Over Our Heads. I'm your host, Preston Dennett, and each week we discuss a new aspect about UFOs or the paranormal. And this week, we're going to discuss Bigfoot in Pennsylvania, and I'm very excited about our guest. Our guest tonight is Eric Altman, and he is actually the director of the Pennsylvania Bigfoot Society. Now, before I actually introduce our guest and get into these very interesting Bigfoot stories, let me just tell you our UFO news. Let me give you a little bit, about 5 minutes of the UFO news. And I want to start with a little story in China, in Shanghai, China. On April 12th, this is very recent, a giant V-shaped UFO was seen over Shanghai. And this was actually reported in the media. The UFO appeared in the night sky in the Hongku and Yangpu districts around 9 p.m. The color of this V-shaped UFO actually changed color from red to blue to green and then yellow. So this convinced many people, of course, that this was a UFO. The skeptical explanation by officials is that the UFO was some type of kite. But I don't know. We'll have to see. We don't get a lot of news from UFOs out of China, so I thought it was pretty interesting. Also very interesting is some UFO reports coming out of Iran, as if we need another foreign power going through there. But just recently, 1 week ago, actually, from today, this Wednesday, a radiant UFO was observed in the sky over the town of Yasuj in western Iran. And apparently this object was observed for more than a half an hour. It was described as a big ball with a blue color. And it disappeared because the weather got cloudy. And officials declined to comment on the event. But interestingly, there's been 4 reports there in the past few months. And allegedly, one of these objects was seen to crash into the Berez Mountains in the central province of Kerman. But I don't know. We'll have to see if anything more comes of that. One really interesting piece of UFO news took place in Puerto Rico. And this was on February 4th, just over 1 month ago this year, at the Mayaguez Zoo. Now, this is a very interesting story. On February 4th of 2007, Pedro Navarro was driving by the zoo. This is at 11:10 a.m. when he saw a plate-shaped UFO, a shiny metallic oval-shaped object flying under the clouds. And the cloud level was about 3,000 feet, so he estimated that's how high this object was. And it just flew by, and he didn't think much of it. But interestingly, there was people at the zoo at this time who had a very unusual experience. It was 1 hour and a half later when Jessica Walker and her husband, Misael Calderon, and their 5-year-old son were taking videotape of the monkeys in the monkey cage, when all the animals started to act very peculiarly, some lied down and became unmoving, while others ran away and started acting very scared. They also felt very strange sensations, and they continued taking their videotape and left. And when they got home, they were playing the videotape and were shocked to see an image of a typical gray-type ET. So they didn't know about the UFO sighting over the zoo at this time. So this is a very interesting case. And I don't know, it's just interesting that there's so many UFOs being caught on videotape, but we just don't see a lot of them. And an interestingly related story took place in Chile, in a haunted house that's really getting a lot of media attention because of what happened there. And they've been having, it's a normal haunted house, they've been having regular haunted activity. But then after a party, the son was taking cell phone pictures of his mother. He took 4 pictures in a row, but only one of the mother came out. And the other 3, there was these snippets of this face of this unknown man. And they took more pictures and more snippets of this face came out. And eventually they put it on a computer and put it all together, and you could see that there was this man in a 3-piece white suit and they had no idea who it was. And they showed it to a lot of people, and they found out that a taxi cab driver had actually seen this apparition standing in front of their house around this time. So it's an interesting case, proof, I think, of a ghostly activity. But we'll have to see. Now, our show tonight is about Bigfoot, and our guest is Eric Altman. Now, I don't know how many of you out there believe in Bigfoot. I do. This is not the first time we've had a Bigfoot on the show. Well, not had Bigfoot himself, but discussed Bigfoot. But our guest, Eric Altman, let me see, I have his bio right here. He was born in Greenburg, Pennsylvania in 1970. And received a Bachelor of Arts in Communication and began researching Bigfoot at the age of 10. And at the age of 14, met Stan Gordon, who is himself a prominent UFO and Bigfoot researcher in Pennsylvania. And in in 1999, he co-founded the Pennsylvania Bigfoot Society with Steve Anderson and Harry Benton, and in January of 2000 was given the position of directorship, which he has held since then. And I'm very, very excited to have him on the show. Eric, thank you very much for coming onto the show.
Well, thank you, Preston. It's a pleasure to be with you this evening, and hello to all your listeners out there.
So age 10 is when you started researching Bigfoot, huh? I mean, you were never skeptical of stuff like this?
No. Growing up as a child, of course, a lot of children have a wild and vivid imagination. Mine was a typical imagination, you know, nothing different about me. I got interested in the subject because I spent my Sunday afternoons after church watching a lot of the old horror movies, the monster movies, the B-rated movies on television. They would run a Sunday afternoon matinee on one of our local channels, and they ran a movie called Legend of Boggy Creek, which is a docudrama. It's a fictional film, but it's based on supposed real events that took place in Falk, Arkansas, involving a hominid-type creature that was harassing the residents and terrorizing the residents.
Right, you know, I actually saw that.
What's found. Yeah, it was a really good movie.
It was good. And, it was scary.
It had a touch of comedy to it, horror. It was just an all-around fun movie, and at the age of 10, being very impressionable, to me that was the greatest thing on television. So I kind of ran with it and spent a lot of time at the library reading up on the subject, checking out newspaper accounts, magazine accounts, and so forth. And that's how I pretty much got involved with it.
Wow. I saw that movie and I remember very well, actually. What year did it come out? Do you know?
If memory serves me correctly, this was in the early 1970s. I want to say 72, 73, something to that effect, where it was actually at the movie theaters, the drive-ins, and that sort of thing. And,
okay.
And it was on television.
That's about right.
Yeah, it was on television in the late 1970s, 79, 80, around that time. And I remember back when I was about 10 years old, 1980, seeing this on TV, and that and another movie called Creature from Black Lake, which was based out of Caddo Lake in Texas, about a hair-covered hominid-type creature that was harassing the residents in Caddo, Texas, and that was a pretty good one, too. Those two movies were pretty much the benchmark that got me started in Bigfoot research and kind of got me motivated and interested in the subject.
I don't know why people are so skeptical of Bigfoot. I mean, I myself was very skeptical for years, even after having investigated UFOs and ghosts and things like this. But so those movies were pretty, I mean, when I saw them, I assumed they were just pure fiction. And
right, a lot of people do. They see these movies, and because they're considered docudramas and they're supposedly based on factual events that happened, a lot of people look at that and say, yeah, right, there's no such thing as a hair-covered hominid or a Neanderthal or a missing link or something to that effect running around in the woods. If there was, we would know about it. You know, scientists would have discovered it by now. And people really kind of turned a blind eye to the subject. And there's a lot of skeptics out there that say, you know, where's the physical proof, where's the body, why haven't we captured one? So, you know, when people see these kind of movies out, and they are kind of hokey, but still, they kind of tend to lean towards them being fictional rather than based on, you know, true events that happened in the 1970s in those locations.
Right. You know, I bet if Bigfoot walked on four legs, people wouldn't have as hard a time believing in him.
Well, actually, there are cases that, especially out of the South, that talk about people witnessing a creature dropping down to all fours and running like a bear would run. I've never personally investigated such a case here in Pennsylvania or in the northeastern United States, but there are cases that you know, talk about a creature that moves very quickly, like a bear on four legs. Primarily, the report is being on two legs or walking bipedal, like a human or the gorilla would walk. Gorillas do walk on their knuckles from most of the time, but they do walk upright on occasions. But yeah, the majority of the reports we do receive are these animals are upright and walking like humans do.
All right. Now, when did you first start actually investigating first-hand cases?
When I was about 27 years old, back in 1997, there really wasn't, in Pennsylvania, there wasn't a research organization or a group that I could join to learn how to research Bigfoot and Bigfoot sightings in Pennsylvania. I always wanted to do it. And I would say 1965, 66, that time frame, to about 1993, Stan Gordon, who's a prominent UFO and Bigfoot researcher from Pennsylvania, had several groups, in fact, that did this sort of thing. They went out and investigated these reports, and his last group disbanded in 1993. There was another UFO researcher and also a cryptozoologist or a cryptid researcher named Dr. Paul Johnson from Pennsylvania. He and another researcher, Joan Jeffers, had a group as well. Well, these groups had by the early mid to 1990s had disbanded. They broke up, and I was trying to find as much information as I could on the subject, but there wasn't anybody in Pennsylvania to really turn to because there weren't any groups. So myself and a couple other enthusiasts who I met online through the internet decided to put together the Pennsylvania Bigfoot Society. And I was at that point more or less an enthusiast. I still am an enthusiast on the subject. I thoroughly enjoy it, but we decided, you know, why not put a group of our own together to get out there and investigate these reports. And before we went full-blown into launch...
Eric, are you there?
Yes, I'm here.
Okay. Sorry about that. We got cut off.
The paranormal is happening with the phone tonight.
right. Not unusual when you're talking about these kind of topics. Okay. Our guest, again, is Eric Altman. We're talking about Bigfoot in Pennsylvania. And I'm your host, Preston Dennett, and our show is UFOs and the Paranormal Over Our Heads. Okay, Eric Altman, you were telling us about how you had just formed this group, the Pennsylvania Bigfoot Society. You know, what's fascinating to me is that, what year was this? This is pretty recently, and well, not very recently, but
1999, we put the group together, yes.
You know, it seems to me that something as important as Bigfoot should have been more seriously studied by this point, but it's amazing to me that, you know, it's not getting more attention, I guess, is what I'm trying to say.
Right. And at this point, we are starting to get some scientists, wildlife biologists and professors of anatomy and primatology that are finally starting to come forward and take a serious look at the subject. For decades, this subject has been investigated by amateurs. And enthusiasts who have had the motivation and the drive to take the subject seriously enough to go out and do the field research and to collect the data and to collect the reports and any trace evidence that we might find. We're fortunate right now that we are getting some pretty predominant and well-known scientists into the field. Darius Swindler is a primatologist, and he's taken an interest in it finally after all this time. And Grover Krantz, the late Grover Krantz, who passed away in the early 2000s, he was an anthropology professor at Washington State University. So we have had our share of scientists who are involved with this. Currently, Dr. Jeff Meldrum is, I guess you would call an anatomy professor or an associate professor of anatomy, and he's out of the University of Idaho, and he does fantastic studies on these footprints casts that have been collected over the years, and he's able to determine, you know, that these casts are made by a living foot rather than a fake or a hoax.
Right, and, the dermal ridges and things
right.
like that. I just got
well, he really hasn't discovered the dermal ridges. That came from a gentleman named Jimmy Chilcutt out of Conroe, Texas. And Jimmy is an anthropologist, but I guess the term would be kind of like a scientist. I'm losing my train of thought at the moment, so forgive me. But he works with the Conroe Police Department, and kind of like a CSI situation. He goes in and he does, he collects the forensic science, that's it. He collects data based on, you know, fingerprints and, you know, searching the scene of the crime for evidence. Right. He's also a collector, probably one of the few in the world that has actually documented primate fingerprints and footprints through, you know, fingerprinting techniques that police use. He has probably one of the largest collections in the world. And he and Dr. Meldrum got together and started studying these prints and determined there were dermal ridges on these prints that don't belong to a human or a known primate. And Dr. Meldrum and Jimmy Chilcutt are both convinced that these prints are from an unknown primate, and it's very possible they are Bigfoot tracks.
Well, I'm sure you heard that the troubles Dr. Meldrum is having at his university.
Mm-hmm.
Which,
yes.
I guess all the professors are signing petitions to get his tenure thrown out or something like this.
Exactly. And I've had the opportunity to meet Dr. Meldrum in person when I was at a conference in Texas a few years ago. And he's a fantastic gentleman, very genuine, very friendly, very sincere about the subject. And he takes a very serious approach to the subject. And unfortunately, his colleagues may not completely agree with him, and they're trying to remove his tenure. I don't foresee that happening, but they are attempting to, or they have attempted to. Unfortunately, there's still a lot of scientists out there who scoff at the idea of an unknown primate roaming the forests of the northern, you know, hemisphere here, you know, the northern United States, Canada, and the world in general. They just kind of laugh at the idea that there's an undiscovered primate out there.
Well, from my understanding, I mean, when the Europeans came to the New World in, I guess, the 1800s or earlier, all the Native American populations had stories about Sasquatch and all this, and so it's not like it's anything new.
No. The legends of Sasquatch and Bigfoot date back hundreds of years to Native American folklore and tribal tales. They've talked about these creatures. There's hundreds of names that the Native American tribes had for this creature based on the tribes. They each had their own name for it. Sasquatch is probably the most popular, but there were many, many other names that the Native American tribes had for these creatures. To me, why would these tribes and why would these people have names for such a creature or talk about a creature if there wasn't such a creature? There's talk about these tribes trying to scare their women and children into staying in the villages and telling them of big hairy creatures that would come down from the mountains and steal the children if they didn't stay around the villages, you know, and didn't wander off into the woods.
Right. Well, I want to ask you about that, about the kidnapping stories.
Right.
Ostman or what?
Yeah, Albert Ostman had a supposed kidnapping encounter with a Bigfoot creature took place in British Columbia, and the exact date escapes me, but I believe it was in the 1920s, maybe 1930s. He was prospecting in British Columbia, and he was camping, and something continued to enter his campgrounds, his campsite, when he was away prospecting. It would rummage through his pack and his food, and it wasn't like a bear. It wasn't, you know, destroying everything. It was very neatly going through his things, and it wasn't ripping things apart like a bear would do. And this became very intriguing to Albert. And eventually, on one of the nights he was awake, he kept a rifle in his sleeping bag with him. A Bigfoot creature supposedly came and picked him up and carried him many, many miles off into the mountains. And finally, when Albert climbed out of his sleeping bag, he found himself in a valley. And he was being held hostage basically by a family of Bigfoot creatures, a mother, a father, and two juvenile. And that was his story, and he claimed that he was held captive for quite some time, for about a week or so, and finally he was able to make his escape by offering snuff or chewing tobacco to the father figure, the father Bigfoot figure, and was able to make an escape. It's one of the most intriguing stories that I've ever had the opportunity to study and read. Unfortunately, this was well before my time, so I never had the opportunity to meet Mr. Osman or talk to him about it. I've only had the opportunity to read it in books and articles, but it's an intriguing story. And unfortunately, it's the only one that I'm aware of a Bigfoot kidnapping a person.
No, I know there's another one. There's a Native American woman who claimed that she was kidnapped onto Victoria Island.
Oh, yes, yes. I'm not very familiar with that one. I didn't do much research on it, but I have heard of it. I didn't follow up much on that one. There's so much out there on the subject. Unfortunately, there are things that slip through the cracks and you miss, and that's one of the ones that I had. I didn't do much research on that particular one, but I did hear of it, that she claimed that she was kidnapped by a creature. But there are very, very few, very rare cases of this. And more so, there's even rare cases of Bigfoot reportedly killing people. There's the Bauman case that President Roosevelt talks about in his Wilderness Hunter book. Bauman was a trapper, and he and his partner were in the Plain States doing some trapping, and apparently, according to the story, while they were camping, a creature came into their campsite at night, and they took shots at it with their rifles and scared it off, and then this thing kept coming around and screaming and hollering, carrying on, and coming into their campsites, and it scared them so badly they decided to pack up camp, collect their traps, and get out of there. And they went out, started collecting their traps. It was afternoon. They decided, the sun's out, nothing's going to bother us, let's split up and get our traps. Bauman continued to collect his traps, and his partner went back to the campsite. When Bauman returned, he found his partner dead with a broken neck and very large human-like footprints all around the body.
Wow.
Yeah, there's very few cases that I'm aware of that talk about a Bigfoot creature killing, a person.
I know there's allegedly one that happened here where I'm at in Southern California, but I don't know if it was true or not. It turned out it might have been a hoax.
Yeah, you hear things like that. I heard from a researcher out in the Pacific Northwest, Ray Crow. He had told me one time that there was a report of a family that was supposedly killed by a Bigfoot creature, and the sole survivor was a little girl they found hiding, cowering under a picnic table, and she had told the story about it. And the details were very vague on it, but I remember the conversation with Ray a few years ago. Anything's possible because, after all, we're looking at an animal, and any animal is a wild animal. They have, typical wild animal traits, behaviors. If they're cornered, if you threaten them or threaten their young, their offspring, or their food source, or even encroach their territory, these animals can become defensive and they can attack.
Right.
So it is very possible.
Well, aren't there a few cases where people claim to have been rescued by Bigfoot? I vaguely remember one guy saying he fell off a cliff or was bit by a snake up in the Mount Shasta area.
I've heard the tales, too, and we all read about them and hear about them. It's possible that happened. I've read so many reports over the years, and either online or in books or newspaper articles. It's really difficult to determine who is telling the truth and who isn't. It's very possible that did happen. From all the reports that I've read over the years, it's a very rare case. Or a very rare situation, if it did in fact occur. Personally, I would tend to think that if it did happen, it's a situation where it's going to be very rare, and it's not going to happen all the time. And I personally don't see something like that happening, but again, anything's possible.
Right. Well, I mean, there's been thousands and thousands of encounters, and obviously if only one or two outlying cases where, something
right.
like that has happened. But
yeah.
Would you say that Bigfoot is dangerous?
Like I said earlier, this animal is, in fact, an animal. and any animal can be dangerous if its food source is threatened, or it's young, or if it's threatened itself. You know, if you kick a dog so many times, it's eventually going to bite you. You know, if you take shots at a bear, the bear is defending its young, it's going to rise up and defend itself. So I would not say the animal is dangerous. You know, if you have a chance encounter with it and you don't threaten it, I would say from the cases I've read that it's more shy and curious than anything else. And I've read so many cases where the animal encounters a human or the human encounters an animal and the creature flees. There's only a few seconds of brief face-to-face contact before the animal flees the scene. So I would have to say that normally, in normal circumstances, this animal I wouldn't consider dangerous. But again, this is an animal, and with any animal, you know, if you threaten it, threaten its food sources, its prey or its offspring, its territory, encroaches territory, and it doesn't want you there, it's going to do whatever it can to get you out of there. And there's so many reports that talk about these creatures throwing rocks and stones to intimidate people, the roars and the screams to intimidate people, you know, to leave the area. So I would say, yes, it can be dangerous, but from the reports that I've read, it's not always the case.
Well, you're listening to UFOs and the Paranormal Over Our Heads. Our guest today is Eric Altman, and we're talking about Bigfoot in Pennsylvania. Now, is there a website that people can go to learn more about Bigfoot in Pennsylvania?
There's several in Pennsylvania. There's my site, and of course Stan Gordon has a website as well, but our site that documents quite a number of reports from our group, from Stan Gordon, from Paul Johnson over the years, is www.pabigfootsociety.com. And we have a sightings database broken down by counties in Pennsylvania. We have a contact list. If people in Pennsylvania have seen a creature, they're welcome to get in touch with one of our researchers in one of those counties where they've had their experience. We are currently accepting memberships to join the Pennsylvania Bigfoot Society if anybody would be interested. There's information on the website. We have some interesting pictures that are on the website that a few of the cases that we've investigated recently, and we're hoping to get some more pictures up there. I tend not to put pictures up on the website unless it's a pretty interesting case or there's some conclusive evidence or interesting evidence collected at the scene. And there are not many pictures on the website. If the visitors check it out, they'll see for themselves.
Right. Well, I looked at the website. I'm going to repeat it again so people can write it down. It's www.pabigfootsociety.com. Yeah, I really liked actually the map that you had out there. So I was wondering, what's the oldest, the earliest sighting of Bigfoot in Pennsylvania that you know of?
The earliest sighting in Pennsylvania, there's actually two. And to explain the situation, the Native Americans over in the eastern and southeastern part of the state talked about a creature, a 4-foot-tall creature called an Albert Witch. And this creature was hair-covered. It would sit up in trees and throw apples off the trees at picnickers to get them to leave the area. That occurred hundreds of years ago. So I don't know if there's any factual information on that or if that's just a tale passed down through the years, but I know there are reports and folktale of the Susquehannock Indians over in the southeastern part of the state of Pennsylvania that talked about these Albert Witch's creatures. The first documented report in Pennsylvania came out of the 1830s in Bridgewater, Pennsylvania, where a gentleman was out picking berries one afternoon and came in contact with what he described as a hairy wild man. The two made eye contact, face-to-face kind of situation before the hairy wild man fled off into the bush and disappeared. So the early 1830s would probably be the first documented report that I'm familiar with. There may be more out there, but I've done research over the years and I've not been able to locate anything different.
Wow. So when did the reports start flooding in, like around the same time that, what's it, Jerry Crew and that whole scene made Bigfoot popular in the, 1950s or 60s?
Yeah, Jerry Crew's report kind of kicked off the the term Bigfoot, so to speak. Before then, it was known as basically a wild man, wild hairy man.
We may have been better off with that term, because Bigfoot seems to turn people off and make them skeptical.
Yeah, I would tend to agree with that. And how it got its name, and I'm sure you're familiar with this from doing some research on it, Jerry Crew was a foreman for a road crew, and they were building a road through the Sierra Mountains in California in the 1950s. And his crew, over a period of weeks, would encounter these very large human-like footprints in the sand and dirt around their heavy machinery. And they would find 300-pound gallon drums of gasoline and oil that something would pick up and throw hundreds of yards, 100 to 150 yards away from where it originally sat. They'd find them over embankments. These things were very heavy. It would take four or five guys to lift one of these things up, and they were just being tossed around like soda cans. And this went on for weeks. And finally, Jerry and his crew started making plaster casts of these footprints they were finding, and they would find them at night, or actually, I should say in the morning, they'd come back to their equipment. In the morning, they'd find that something was there during the night and walking around the equipment. And they took these plaster casts to the Humboldt Times newspaper, and that's how the term or the phrase Bigfoot was coined. They saw these very large human-like plaster casts, and this thing's got a very big foot, and it's kind of stuck. That's the basics of the story.
Right. Well, I imagine that people were seeing this just as often as they were, you know, are now.
Well,
to a certain extent, I mean, but just didn't know who to tell.
Right, exactly. I think there's not many documented reports from the 1940s and 50s. There are reports out there, but I think after the 50s, and even from the 50s on to about the 70s, maybe early 80s, there was a huge explosion of sightings, and I think most of that attributes to the Roger Patterson-Robert Gimlin film that came out in 1967.
Right, which is still controversial.
Exactly. It still hasn't been proven if it is or is not a Bigfoot creature. But
I'm convinced it's real personally after looking at all
that. I believe it is, too. I have yet to see any conclusive evidence to prove that it is not. Unfortunately, I have yet to see any conclusive evidence to prove that it is. So I personally think it is a creature, just from watching the film and talking with other researchers that have done extensive research on the film and examining the film and taking measurements from the sighting location back when this occurred. So I personally believe the film is legitimate. I think it is a creature. However, you know, until I see the conclusive proof, which I don't think we'll ever have, you know, there's always going to be a little bit of me that says, I think it's real, but there's always that chance, you know.
Right. So
people
come
forward and claim there's a guy named Bob Hieronymus who came forward a few years ago and claimed he was in the suit.
Well, where's the suit?
Exactly. Exactly. A costume manufacturer by the name of Philip Morris, supposedly, and they claim that Roger Patterson paid them to have a suit made, and they shipped the suit to Roger, but no one can produce the suit, and Philip Morris, the company, has tried to replicate the suit that was worn on that day, and it looks absolutely nothing like the suit that's in the film, or the creature in the film, I should say.
Right.
If it is, in fact, a creature, a guy in a suit, it looks nothing like that at all. So,
of a female Bigfoot, no less.
Right, exactly. And Roger was, I don't believe, I've never met Roger personally. He passed away long before I was actively in field research, but I don't believe Roger nor Robert were capable of pulling off a hoax of that extent.
Well, and there's a lot of evidence, too. I mean, the footprint evidence was taken there, and there was all sorts of sightings around that time. And
right.
I think
that attributes to a lot of the popularity of the creature and a lot more people reporting these sightings.
So do you think Bigfoot is intelligent, or is it just like, you know, coyote intelligent, or you know what I mean?
I think it's a very intelligent animal. I think it's more intelligent than a coyote, of course, or any common wildlife. But I think we're dealing with a very intelligent primate species of creature, and I have yet to determine what exactly it is. There's a lot of theories on what it could be. But I think it's a very intelligent animal simply based on the fact that these sightings have gone on for hundreds of years, and it continues to remain very elusive. It tries to avoid man at all costs. there are those chance encounters that do occur, and as I explained earlier, if there is an encounter between a person and a creature, they're very short, and the creature usually ends up fleeing. I think they've learned how to adapt to their shrinking environment as humans encroach on their environment, and they continue this day to avoid humans and from being captured or killed. I think they're very intelligent creatures, and what we've learned from the sighting reports, you know, they have their own forms of communication between themselves through the different types of noises they make. Some researchers believe they use wood to communicate, knocking wood on wood or stone on stone.
Oh, interesting.
So, yeah, I do believe they're very intelligent creatures. I'm hoping one day we have a scientist or a group of scientists that are able to study them in their own habitat to learn more about them.
Well, I understand they do whistles, and
right.
some of the primates that we know of whistle as well, so that would fit in.
And there are researchers who have even theorized that these creatures are so intelligent that they can mimic other animals, birds.
Oh, wow.
Deer, bear. You know, common wildlife, they can mimic these creatures or these animals to sound almost identically like them, dogs. There have been many cases where people have reported seeing a Bigfoot and then a few minutes later hearing a Bigfoot creature making a dog-like noise when there's no dogs around. So there's some interesting theories about that.
Right. Now, California and Washington and this area is supposedly the number one spot, but Pennsylvania seems to me pretty active, and it's, of course, all over the United States and the world, as I'm sure you know, but how active is Pennsylvania compared to other spots?
Pennsylvania is quite active. Right now, I would have to say that the most active areas in the United States are, of course, the Pacific Northwest. You've got Northern California, Oregon, Washington, British Columbia. Those seem to be the most active areas for Bigfoot activity. We also have Texas and Oklahoma that's been quite active the last few years. Pennsylvania, Ohio, New York, and Maryland, West Virginia, right in this tri-state or four-state area, has been quite active and has been active for a while. It hasn't been as active as it was in the 70s and 80s. During the 70s and 80s, this was probably one of the hottest places in the country for Bigfoot activity. But over the last couple of years, sightings have started to pick up again, and it's seeming to become more active here. Another active area, which is quite intriguing to me, is the Florida area, where they have the skunk ape and the Everglades. The sightings still continue to come in from that area and along the Gulf Coast, Louisiana and Mississippi. They still get their reports from there as well.
Right. I wonder if all of these are the same species. I think Ivan Sanderson said that there's at least four, but I'm wondering if there's a lot more different species, because I mean, some of these are reports of really short, hairy, wild men, and I guess depending on where you are in the world.
Right, and I think that it's hard to gauge if these animals are in fact a different type of species or a subspecies branched off of the original creature.
Could they be Gigantopithecus?
Right, and that's what some people believe, that it is a descent of the Gigantopithecus, which is an extinct primate, one of the largest primates in the world. But we don't have a full skeletal remains. We just have some fossil remains from the teeth and the jaw. But there appear to be different types of these creatures based on height and color and size and behavior. Over here in the eastern United States, these creatures tend to be more aggressive than they are in the western United States. And in the south, they tend to be more aggressive as well. And then it could be based on the environment and the terrain that they live in. There could be a lot of factors that are causing these creatures to appear the way they do and to act the way they do.
So how tall does Bigfoot get? What's the tallest case you've heard of? What's the tall range?
The height range that I've studied, and as far as reading reports and investigating reports, the average height is between 7 and 7.5 feet tall. The tallest creature report that I've read has been well over 12 feet. But 7 to 7.5 seems to be the average height of a creature, and I've read reports of 8 to 9, 10 feet in height, with 12 being the highest.
12 would probably be an exaggeration, huh?
I think so, and I don't fault the witness for it, but I tend to think that witnesses who do have sightings may not necessarily embellish, but may not be able to give a good description based on what they've seen. They're stunned. You know, this is something you don't see every day and you don't experience every day, and this is a very shocking encounter for most people who see this. And when they go back to recollect, you know, how big this creature was, it was much bigger than they were. So they're thinking, my goodness, this thing could have been 12 feet tall. And there are very few cases that I've followed up on or read on where people have actually been able to see the creature standing next to something that they can gauge the height, like a tree branch, and then being able to measure that tree branch later and saying, yes, it was 12 feet tall or 8 feet tall. I think some people are looking up at these animals and saying, oh, my gosh, it's huge. It had to be over 12 feet tall and 900 pounds. You know, they're guessing.
Huh.
And it could be based on fear or shock, maybe a poor guesstimate, if you want to call it that. But from what I'm reading and what I'm investigating, the average height is around 7 to 7.5 feet tall.
Right. You know what's another weird thing that I've noticed is these things don't travel in groups, like, ever.
Well, there are cases where there have been family units sighted, or two creatures sighted, possibly a male and a female. There are a lot more, you'd be surprised, there are a lot more reports than you would think of these creatures being seen together in a family unit, two adult creatures and a small offspring.
Yeah, I've heard of that, but never like four or five or six or seven male Bigfoots running along the group.
I agree with you. As far as I'm aware of, and there could be reports out there, I have never read or heard of a report of five or six or seven of these creatures. Two or three, yes, and that might be based on the family unit. I've talked to witnesses who said there had to be three creatures where I was. I saw one, but there were sounds coming from all around me. And there could have been three creatures in that situation, but they may have been from the same family unit. Now, of course, I'm just speculating. I don't know for sure, but... That's based on some of the witnesses I've talked to and reports that I've read. But no, I'm not familiar with any situation where there's been five or six creatures or even more. I know Fred Beck in the mining group in Mount St. Helens, Ape Canyon to be exact, in the 1920s, his party was attacked by a group of these Bigfoot creatures. They spent the night trying to break into the cabin, raining rocks down on the cabin from the cliffs above, and from what Fred said, there was quite a number of these creatures. So that would be the only case I'm aware of or familiar with that there was a large number of creatures involved.
Huh. You know, here where I'm located is in Canoga Park in the San Fernando Valley, and I started receiving Bigfoot cases a while back, and now I've invested maybe five or six or seven, and some of these cases involve Bigfoot that's come right through the suburbs. And I'm wondering, have you had cases where people have seen Bigfoot where you wouldn't think that?
Oh, yes. I'll give you a perfect example. Right now I live in Jeanette, Pennsylvania, and it's a eastern suburb of Pittsburgh. And Pittsburgh is a very populated city. It's not a major city like New York or Los Angeles, but it's a very large city. And in 2000... we had a report in the summer of 2000. We had a report that took place from a mile and a quarter from my home. In the morning, a woman witnessed a creature standing in the middle of a side road off of one of our main roads to go through Pennsylvania, Route 30. It travels. Used to be the Lincoln Highway, they called it, and it goes through Pennsylvania. And she was driving to work and happened to glance down a side country road that goes off of Route 30, and she saw a creature standing in the middle of the road and took three steps off the road and disappeared into the trees.
Huh.
We had a sighting last January, 2006, in northern Allegheny County, Allegheny County is where Pittsburgh is at, about 15 miles from downtown Pittsburgh, where two men were, they owned a family business, and I guess the uncle was looking out the back door. He called his nephew over, and the two of them watched a creature walking down a hillside away from the business, across the railroad tracks, a creek, and up another hillside into this wooded area, which is a park in Allegheny County that's heavily populated by travelers. They come in, visitors, they come in and park to the park, and they
they recreate, they fish, they ride bikes, they roller skate, they hike. I mean, there's a lot of population right there in that area. It's a very heavily populated area. So, yes, we do get reports of these creatures coming into suburban areas and heavily populated areas. Do I think they're staying there? No. I think it might be a case of them passing through or looking for a food source, a temporary food source. And I think those cases are rare, but they do happen.
Well, have you yourself encountered any evidence of footprints or any first-hand encounters for yourself?
I've found what I believe to be Bigfoot tracks. Here in Pennsylvania in the eastern United States, our soil and our topography is very hard. We don't get the rainfall that the Pacific Northwest gets, and the ground out there is a lot more soft and sandy. It's a different type of soil, so the tracks that we find over here resemble human-like prints, very large human impressions. I call them impressions because they're very rare that we find prints in the ground unless it's mud or snow that you can actually see toes and definition to the foot. Usually what we find are very large imprints in the ground, much larger than a boot or a tennis shoe or a human's foot. And those, we have to speculate, you know, they were Bigfoot unless there was a Bigfoot sighted, you know, that left those tracks.
Right.
I've actually seen tracks in the mud, and I've seen them in the snow where you can definitely see the toes, the ball of the foot, the heel, everything. And they've been in some pretty remote places where it's very unlikely that a person did it. There's no signs of human beings going into this area or coming out of this area. You just find these tracks, and they're pretty interesting. I did have an encounter in 2001 in northeastern Pennsylvania, right along the New York border, involving a creature that was, I guess you could say, stalking myself and my research partner. It was kind of circling us in a counterclockwise pattern, staying just out of our eyesight. We could hear it moving around. We could hear it deliberately taking steps. It was definitely bipedal. When we went to approach the direction that the animal was walking, and we tried to walk towards it, it fled and ran clockwise back around the way that it had come, breaking branches, moving very fast through the woods. It was an amazing speed how fast this animal moved. And probably as close as I would have to say that I've been to a creature.
Was that scary? I mean, it sounds...
At first, it was very intense because I've done field research and I never really stopped to think what would happen if I came face-to-face with one of these things. I've always been a gung-ho, just go out and do it kind of person. And I never really thought, well, what happens if I do come face-to-face with this thing? And here I was out in the middle of the woods, a good 2 or 3 miles from the cars, and all of a sudden, here's the possibility of this actually happening. It was very intense. We couldn't see the animal, so I can't say for sure if it was a Bigfoot, but we could hear it moving, taking deliberate bipedal steps, meaning that it was walking on two legs, very heavy, breaking a lot of branches, and purposely staying out of our sight. It was moving through some very thick brush and trees, and we started to move towards where the sound was coming from. It fled. Like, it knew we were coming, it heard us, and it got out of Dodge, so to speak. And
right.
It was intense, but it was also very exciting. It had a lot of adrenaline flowing that day.
You know, I had a very similar experience myself, actually, when I was interviewing a lady who's been having a lot of experiences with Bigfoot up in Acton. This is in Angeles Crest Forest.
Mm-hmm.
And she said she knew where the Bigfoot was hanging out, which valley.
Mm-hmm.
And she took me up there, and we parked late at night, and no sooner had we gotten out of the car when this... Well, we heard it roar like 3 times in a row.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know what it was. It could have been a bear, I guess, but it sure didn't sound like it.
Yeah, it's pretty intense, especially when you go out hoping to see something, but in the back of your mind you're thinking, well, you know, maybe this really isn't, nothing's going to happen. And then all of a sudden something does happen, and you're kind of caught off guard, and your adrenaline kicks in, and your fight or flight response kicks in, and you're not sure exactly. You know, is this real? Is it a bear? You know, all these questions start racing through your mind. I know it's a very intense experience.
Right. Well, what do you think about all these paranormal reports, the UFO connection, that people report telepathy and things like this?
Those have been fairly common here in Pennsylvania. Stan Gordon and Paul Johnson have both investigated reports like that, where, you know, UFOs have been sighted in the vicinity of a Bigfoot sighting, or people have reported a Bigfoot carrying a blue glowing orb or a spear in its hand. There have been some very odd reports. A woman claimed one night she heard some noises outside her trailer, and she was living out in the middle of the woods, heard some noises, and she grabbed her shotgun, flung open the back door, and standing at her back door was this huge, hairy-looking creature standing on two legs. She pulled the shotgun up. The creature raised its arms in the air as if to say, "Don't shoot." She fired, and in a flash of light, the creature was instantly gone, just completely gone from her sight. Her son, who lived not far from her in another trailer, heard the shooting. He rushed out of his trailer to go over to his mother's house to see what happened. And as he was rushing over there, all of a sudden he was surrounded by five of these creatures. He could see their glowing eyes in the woods, the tree line around him. And then above, he could see these glowing lights, like a UFO was hovering above the tree line. And it frightened him pretty good. We do get these reports. I don't know what to make of them, honestly. I don't know if there's a paranormal connection or not. The reports are rare.
Do you suppose there might be two different kinds of Bigfoot?
It's possible. I've had discussions with many, many people over the subject, and some people believe that it is a paranormal creature, and that's why we have no luck in finding it. That's why we'll never find it. We'll never solve the mystery, because it is a paranormal animal, whether it comes from another planet or comes from a rip in time or a wormhole. That people have so many crazy theories on this thing. Personally, I believe this is an undiscovered primate. It is a real flesh and blood animal. It does exist. It doesn't have any paranormal attributes. It's just an animal that's been smart enough to be elusive to us for many, many years. But I'm not one that I'm going to be closed-minded to someone having reports or talking about these reports or having these theories. I definitely am willing to listen to people, and I respect all opinions, and I'm very open-minded to the subject, because it's a very interesting but very mysterious subject.
Right.
I personally don't believe the animal is paranormal.
Well, for whatever reason, pretty much every case that I've run into has had some UFO or paranormal aspect to it. So it's kind of frustrating for me running into all this research and finding out, my God, you know, this has been going on for quite a while, and it's a very established thing.
Right.
I had no idea, but now I'm convinced, of course, that it is going on.
Yes.
So what about
something weird going on out there, and there are cases that we've talked about briefly that do occur. The majority of cases involve just the creature with no UFO or no paranormal attributes to it. So,
you know, the vast majority.
Right.
Well, what about the smell of this? I mean,
well, it's a smell to me, and I'm working currently with, we have a wildlife biology student in our group, and he's going to be graduating in May, and he's going to be a full-fledged wildlife biologist. And he and I have discussed this at great length, and he feels that the smell that we, or those who have the encounters or sightings, I should say, who encounter this smell, and they don't happen in all the cases, but they do happen in some cases. He believes that it's a pheromone that the creature gives off to intimidate or to kind of stun its prey, so to speak. It's not necessarily, it doesn't bathe, or it's just an animal smell. He believes it's a pheromone the creature gives off that it can cause a fight or flight response or intimidation, or like some animals use that ultrasound, very low ultrasound, to stun their prey.
Right, like a skunk.
Yeah, exactly. That's what he feels, that the smell that we, or I shouldn't say we, but those who experience these creatures smell is from. And it's very possible. I do know that there are creature reports that do have odors with them, and I do know there are creature reports that don't. It's not a common thing in all sighting reports.
What's interesting is that for such a big creature that is so strong and so potentially more powerful than any other creature around, that it's so elusive. I wonder why that would be.
I guess that kind of puzzles me too, to a degree. I think their intelligence, and that's why I alluded to this earlier, I think their intelligence plays a big factor into the creature being so elusive. They've kind of learned over the years about man and how to avoid him. And they, if you really think about it, these animals live in the woods. This is their home, their territory. They know how to blend into their environment and basically disappear into the woods. You know, they camouflage themselves very, very well. They're commonly a dark brown cinnamon brown color, reddish brown color they've been described. So they're going to blend in naturally with their surroundings. And people say, oh, it disappeared. Well, when in fact it may not have disappeared. It might have just stepped behind a tree. And you're thinking it disappeared when it's actually there. It's just hiding, using camouflage to hide itself.
Right,
right. Anything's possible at this point. A lot of these things that I'm talking about are mere speculation and based on sighting reports that we have and from what little we do know about the creatures from these reports.
Right. Well, you're listening to UFOs and the Paranormal Over Our Heads. Our show has been Bigfoot in Pennsylvania, and our guest has been Eric Altman. Eric, is there any last messages you want to give to the listeners? We're pretty much at the end of our hour here.
Yeah, I'd like to encourage everybody to try to keep an open mind when it comes to these animals or anything in general, paranormal, normal. I think the best way to solve these mysteries and to continue to investigate these mysteries is to try to go into it with an open mind and realize that we don't have all the answers yet, and to keep looking and to keep pursuing it, because someday we will, and without those with an open mind, with those who believe in any possibility, we're never going to get anywhere. We're never going to solve the world's greatest mysteries.
Right. I agree. I totally agree. Well, thank you very much for coming on the show.
Well, thank you for having me. It's been a real pleasure.
Yes, definitely have. All right, everyone, that's been our show for tonight. Our guest has been Eric Altman, and we've been talking about Bigfoot in Pennsylvania. Next week, our guest is going to be Bruce Hennigan. We're going to talk about science and the belief in angels and demons. I want to thank you all for listening, and have a great evening.